Hare Krishna. Thank you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 3, Yashoda and Nanda. Gargamuni names Krishna. When Vasudev in Mathura could see the time had come, he asked the senior Yadu priest to see his secret son. The priest, named Gargamuni, who was learned and austere, surprised and pleased King Nanda when he suddenly appeared. King Nanda rose with folded palms for his exalted guest and gave him food and beverages until he was refreshed. Then Nanda said, "My godly friend, so sanctified and wise, is there some sort of service I could possibly provide? You go from place to place through every sort of circumstance, impelled by your concern to help the common man advance. You read the stars and understand both past lives and the next, which helps one live his present life with wisdom and success. Your visit is most timely, and we're very glad you came. May I request you, sir, to give my infant sons their names? Great sage, please use the stars to see the future of my sons. Conduct the proper rituals and do what must be done." Said Gargamuni, "Dear King Nanda, everybody knows I am the Yadu family priest. Now, do you not suppose that Kamsa will find out your sons were given names by me and think your sons the sons of Vasudev and Devaki? King Kamsa is a devil, and he's very sharp as well. He knows that Devaki's eighth child is living somewhere else. He also knows your ties with Vasudev extend way back. Were he to learn I've named your sons, he might launch an attack." Said Nanda, "Gargamuni, naming children is a must. If Kamsa is a danger, we can easily adjust. Come with me to the cowshed. Chant your mantra soft and low. Great sage, my very relatives will never even know." The sage at once agreed, and when the boys were in the shed, he studied their astrology at length. At last he said, "The older boy is Bala, strong. He'll also go by Ram, the one who pleases all. And there's a third name, Sankarshan. This name means one who brings together different families, in this case, both King Yadu's and King Nanda's dynasties." Though Gargamuni knew that Vasudev had sired this son, he didn't mention it to Nanda, nor to anyone. "Your younger son is Krishna. He's appeared in ages past in white and red and yellow shades and different social castes. He was the son of Vasudev, the timeless stars proclaim, so in this lifetime Vasudev shall also be his name. Your son will gather countless names by his activities. He'll keep your subjects happy and prevent calamities. Lord Vishnu comes when gods have failed and evil floods the earth, and someone much like Vishnu is your son in his new birth." With this, sage Gargamuni smiled and slipped out of the shed. King Nanda very happily considered what he'd said. "How fortunate I am," he thought, "to have such special sons. I must beware of demons, or whatever threats may come." Krishna's mischief. In time, the boys began to crawl upon their hands and knees. They roamed the sands of Nanda's lands and felt themselves quite pleased. They'd crawl to see a neighbor lady's shining ankle bells, then crawl back to their mothers, who stood smiling somewhere else. Their mothers held the mud-stained babies tightly to their chests. Affection filled their hearts as mother's milk filled up their breasts. They looked upon their sons, who sucked and smiled from underneath, and happily took count of all their tiny baby teeth. When Balaram and Krishna saw the baby calves walk by, they grab and tug their tails until the calves were terrified. In fear, the calves would dash about, the babies holding tight, until the gopis rescued them while laughing in delight. The village women loved the boys and never could relax for fear they'd suffer injury from monkeys, dogs, or cats. But when the growing boys first walked and later ran and played, the women, seeing mischief, came to Yashoda to say, "We go to milk our family cows early in the morning and find that Krishna let the calves in without a warning. The cows give nothing, for the calves sucked up every mouthful. Dear Yashoda, your son is wrecking our peaceful households. Have you observed the local beasts growing fat and chunky? Your Krishna steals our butter pots just to feed the monkeys. Our husbands catch him, but he smiles like a little dandy. Dear Yashoda, your son is wrecking our peaceful pantries. Because you cannot chastise Krishna, it seems, or teach him, we hide our butter pots where Krishna can never reach them. In spite, he runs into our nurseries to pinch our babies. Dear Yashoda, we simply want to be peaceful ladies. Your Krishna uses lengths of wood for a makeshift ladder and climbs up to our butter pots hidden in the rafters. He breaks those butter pots apart, getting what he's after. Dear Yashoda, your son's a thief. Kindly stop your laughter. We think you're taking Krishna's actions a little lightly. Your son and Balaram wear jewelry that shines so brightly they find within our darkened storerooms the food we're hiding. Dear Yashoda, your son's in need of a good chastising. Our husbands catch your Krishna robbing us in this fashion and say to him, 'You are a thief,' with a show of passion. 'No, you're a thief,' your son replies. How he disrespects them. Dear Yashoda, he is your son. Won't you please correct him? Your Krishna fouls our rooms and kitchens and in between them. He leaves a puddle and a pile every time we clean them. Just see him look at you with such innocent expression. Dear Yashoda, it's time your son made a full confession." Krishna eats dirt. One day, while Krishna played with all the other cowherd boys, his playmates told his mother something new. "Your son has eaten dirt," the boys all breathlessly complained. So Yashoda picked up her son and anxiously exclaimed, "Dear Krishna, all your playmates, even Balaram, assert that you have run off by yourself to eat a scoop of dirt. Our house is full of sweets and food conducive for good health. How is it they are saying you have done this to yourself?" Lord Krishna said, "Dear mother, why would I be eating dirt when you give me such lovely meals, including nice desserts? My playmates are conspiring and telling you some lies. Just look within yourself, within my mouth, and see with your own eyes." When with his parents, Krishna always hides his majesties, except in certain times and circumstances such as these. "All right, then," Yashoda replied, "sit down and open wide." So Krishna climbed upon her lap and instantly complied. When Yashoda looked in his mouth, she saw, by Krishna's grace, the seas and mountains of the earth, the stars and outer space, the elements, the modes, the worlds of heaven and of hell, all bodies, karma, endless time. She even saw herself. "The universe in Krishna's mouth," thought Yashoda in fear. "Is this a dream? Am I awake? How could all this appear? Perhaps this is some mystic power Krishna's showing me." As love receded, Yashoda could see reality. "This child is God in person. I should simply bow my head. No one can understand him, though so many words are said. He causes this creation and maintains it all as well. It seems his mystic energy has put me in a spell. Illusion has me thinking I am Nanda's wife and queen, that Krishna is our son, and that our lives are as they seem. I think my subjects, cows and calves, obey my every whim. In fact, I'm Krishna's servant, and my life is meant for him." As Yashoda observed the truth, just then, by Krishna's grace, maternal love returned, and she resumed her former place. Forgetting Krishna's cosmic mouth, she hugged her son once more and relished love for him more deeply than she had before. The Vedas and Upanishads declare Lord Krishna's fame. His glories are expounded in more books than I can name. Yet Krishna wanted Yashoda to think of him as one of many cowherd boys, her naughty, ordinary son. Krishna steals butter. One day, as all her servants were engaged with other chores, Lord Krishna's mother saw the butter churn had been ignored. So she collected yogurt to make butter for the day, and as she churned, she sang a song describing Krishna's play. She loved to make up Krishna songs to memorize and sing, so she could think of Krishna as she did most anything. She sang and pulled the churning rope, her yellow sari moist from breast milk born of love she felt just thinking of her boy. Her bangles bounced and sang along. Her earrings danced in time. Her body shook from labor, and her temperature climbed. As beads of perspiration broke across her lovely brow, the flowers fluttered from her hair like petals from a bough. Into the room Lord Krishna toddled. He'd just woken up. He snatched his mother's churning rod and tried to interrupt, for he was feeling hungry after such a lengthy nap. His mother then embraced the Lord and sat him on her lap. When Yashoda saw Krishna's face, milk poured out from her breasts. Her son desired nursing, and she granted his request. The two were sitting happily in motherly repose when Yashoda remembered she'd left milk upon the stove. She dashed it to save the milk. Lord Krishna gave an angry squeal, upset to be disrupted in the middle of his meal. He bit his lips with baby teeth, picked up a nearby rock, and broke apart the butter pot with one well-measured knock. He reached inside for lumps of yellow butter freshly churned, and quickly slipped outside before his mother could return. On seeing all the chaos, Yashoda was mildly irked, for she could understand the mess was Krishna's handiwork. While sitting on an upturned mortar meant for grinding spice, Lord Krishna felt quite satisfied. He easily enticed delighted village monkeys to eat butter from his hand, though now and then he'd glance about in fear of reprimand. While Krishna went on feeding all the monkeys for some time, he did not see his mother creep up softly from behind. The crows, who'd come to watch the fun, saw trouble on the way. As Yashoda drew nearer, they jumped up and flew away. The startled Krishna turned and saw his mother and her stick. He ran, his butter-laden footsteps falling short and quick. His mother ran behind and tried to capture God himself, though he eludes great yogis and most everybody else. Her heavy breasts were burdensome upon her slender waist, and as she ran behind her son, her hair fell out of place. Because she loved her Krishna, Yashoda did not complain, and very soon she captured him and asked him to explain. Her naughty son at once confessed. He then began to cry, his tears mixed with the blackish ointment worn beneath his eyes, creating tainted teardrops that he rubbed across his face. His mother smiled, but held his hand so he could not escape. Absorbed in motherly affection, Yashoda could not see God himself had left behind that broken butter pot. Observing Krishna's fearful face, in all the tears he shed, she threw away her whipping stick and tied him up instead. Now Krishna has no start or end, no front or back or side. He's everywhere and everything, and still personified. Both time and karma come from him, so he's beyond their scope. Yet Yashoda thought she could bind him with a simple rope. By love alone would Krishna ever let himself be bound. When Yashoda picked up the rope and tried, she quickly found that it was just a little short. She tied on more, and then she found the lengthened rope was just a little short again. She added on another rope, too short. She tried another, yet Krishna's tiny waist was still too large for his poor mother. The gopis in the neighborhood all giggled at the fun, and Yashoda laughed too, though all this puzzled everyone. While Yashoda was trying hard to check her naughty son, her body was perspiring and her hair had come undone. On seeing that his mother's strength was quickly running down, Lord Krishna felt compassionate and let himself be bound. Though Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and such great exalted souls who rule the very cosmos are in Krishna's full control, Govinda has a feature that's exceptionally sublime. He's bound by his devotee's love, as he showed at this time. A million goddesses of fortune dance to Krishna's flute, yet he steals butter as if he were poor and destitute. The god of death, the dread of all, fears Krishna's slight command, yet Krishna fears his mother with a whipping stick in hand. The mercy shown to Yashoda, whose selfless love was pure, surpasses all Brahma, Shiva, or Lakshmi could secure. Ascetics, speculators, or the ordinary man cannot reach God as easily as pure devotees can. The sons of Kuvera freed. Bound tightly to the heavy mortar by his mother's hand, child Krishna took his punishment as bravely as a man. When Yashoda went back inside to clean the broken pot, the Lord saw two Arjuna trees adjacent to his spot. These trees had quite a history, and Krishna knew it well. The two were once Kuvera's sons and shared their father's wealth. One day the youthful brothers played in Shiva's lush estate by splashing holy Ganges water in their drunken state. Celestial damsels came along, and in that sacred place, like maddened, drunken elephants, the boys took their embrace. Intoxicated, laughing, not restrained in any way, the young gods rolled their drunken eyes and passed their merry day. Just then, by their good fortune, saintly Narada appeared. The damsels quickly snatched their clothes and hid themselves in fear. The two sons of Kuvera, though, were drunk and didn't care, and stood in front of Narada with nothing on but air. Surmising in a moment the condition of the youths, the sage resolved to help them understand a higher truth. As parents pinch awake a sickly child they need to nurse, Saint Narada decided to assign these two a curse. Said Narada, "Material resources, my dear boys, like beauty, education, or the fame you both enjoy, are all surpassed by money, for it makes men very proud. The rich drink wine and have more sex than others are allowed. The rich man, smug and satisfied with all that he's acquired, quite often grows malicious in pursuit of his desires. To please the mortal flesh he loves and thinks will never die, he murders helpless creatures just for sport and exercise. He does not see the suffering, he'll bring himself the fool, when his fine body ends up ashes, worms, or vulture stool. He thinks his body durable, long-lived, and very strong, and never asks to whom his body actually belongs. Does one's employer own his body? Does his mother dear? Or is it a possession of the king or the premier? At death, one's children put his body on a funeral pyre. Is it the asset of the eldest son who lights the fire? Do slave owners possess the body due to bill of sale? Or is it owned at death by dogs who eat and wag their tails? In fact, the body comes from sand and goes back into sand, as anyone who thinks about it surely understands. Illusion makes the rich try to enjoy what they cannot, but poor folks, on the other hand, can hardly give a thought to sense enjoyment, seeking, as they do, a decent meal. In poverty, one learns how other starving people feel. A hungry person has no extra energy to chase the sins of wine and meat and needless sexual embrace. Impoverished people therefore gain the merits of a saint, who lives without such pleasures by deliberate restraint. Avoiding wealthy sense enjoyers, saints live with the poor, another reason destitutes can spiritually mature. Because you boys are rich and think your bodies are yourselves, your only hope to learn the truth is through some special help. Your drinking and illicit sex have made your brain so numb you like trees you stand there naked, and so trees you shall become. 100 godly years from now, you both shall have the grace to reacquire your freedom and see Krishna face to face. Saint Narada then left, and through his mystic energies, the two sons of Kuvera turned into a pair of trees. They stood there many, many years, until that very day when Krishna dragged a mortar as he slowly crawled their way. Lord Krishna thought, I have no obligation to this pair, but Narada, my dear devotee, took them in his care. He wanted me to see them. Let his prophecy now come so they can rectify what they have previously done. With this, the Lord crawled further on his tiny hands and knees. The heavy mortar wedged between the bases of the trees. The rope bound to his belly strained, but Krishna seemed to glide. He crawled a little further, and both trees crashed to his sides. Then from the fallen branches, leaves and trunks began to rise two brilliant glowing gods with folded hands and downcast eyes. Their beauty lit the very earth, yet as they bowed their heads before the toddler Krishna, they looked up a bit and said, O Krishna, the greatest of mystics, our Lord, O cause of all causes, our lives are restored. Your dear servant Narada called you, and thus, transcendent Creator, you sanctified us. The planets and stars are within your control. You are the director of each spirit's soul. You know all the secrets of every heart, yet fools think of you as remote and apart. Unless you disclose yourself, who can perceive that you are beyond what the mind can conceive? We won't try to analyze all that you do. Instead, we most humbly bow down before you. Since Narada cursed us and cured our disease, our hands are now pledged to serve your devotees. Without their intrusion, our lives were condemned. May we see them always and serve you through them. The two young gods thus prayed as Krishna smiled to hear the sound. I freed these two, he thought, yet I remain completely bound. He said to them, Saint Narada indeed is very kind. Your mad desire for opulence made both of you go blind. As darkness disappears before the presence of the sun, the presence of a saint at once enlightens everyone. You both fell down from heaven and were born as naked trees. Go back now with my blessings and remain my devotees. The two sons of Kuvera bowed, enormously inspired. Lord Krishna's gift, devotion, was the wealth they now desired. Ecstatic with the blessing saintly Narada bestowed, they circled round their bound-up Lord and rose to their abode. Hare Krishna. Ankush.
Wonderful reading, and I guess I got most of my notes from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's reading. So, first point was like Gargamuni, when he came to Nand Maharaj, Nand Maharaj says that like you are perfect, so you don't need anything. Devotee is full in everything, And since you are perfect, what can I do for you? So these two points were made by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And so he was saying that the coming, visiting of Gargamuni was not pointless. He didn't need anything. So like, because when he was saying that you are perfect and what can I do for you? So we think that, okay, his coming was pointless. What was the point of his coming? So he was making the point that actually saintly people visit the householders to enlighten him in spiritual life. This the point we know, but I guess the argument what he was giving. And examples of a saint visiting a householders that were given was in his commentary was Sanat Kumar visiting Prithu Maharaj and Vaman Dev visiting Bali Maharaj and how he sanctified. And second, I was reading about astrology. I was thinking like, what's the purpose of astrology? So it states here that it's to know the past and future of a living entity. And Prabhupada noted in Krishna book that We can know due to what reason are we currently suffering or enjoying our current karmas. So, yeah, I don't know, like, still, I feel that for devotees, what is the purpose of astrology? Maybe for, like, that it, we have heard, like, both for Parikshit Maharaj and Krishna, that I think for Lord Ram, I don't know, but they describe his future activities and give their name. So it's kind of like Namkaran, the name-giving ceremony is related to astrology, and it's also like a purificatory process that is essential. That sorry, I was saying that Namkaran ceremony, the name-giving ceremony is related to the astrology, and it's a purificatory process. And Nand Maharaj suggested that every newborn child should have a purificatory ceremony, like Vaishya and Kshatriya and Brahman also. And then another point was mentioned that Brahman is guru to both Kshatriya and Vaishya. In this, Brahman is guru to both Kshatriya and Vaishya, like. Gargamuni approach, so he could do name giving ceremony, it has to be done by a guru. So Nand Maharaj said that you are guru of all because you are Brahman, in Brahman position. And Balram is actually, since he's a son of Rohini, he's a Kshatriya, and Krishna, since he's understood to be son of Nanda, he's a Vaishya. So Gargamuni is guru to him. Okay, and another thing that this event actually happened, this name-giving ceremony happened before the coming of demons, Putana and Trinavarta, that is mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I don't understand, they were trying to keep it secret, but still Kansa got to know about Krishna, because he was sending demon afterwards, I don't know why. this kind of contradiction, they were trying to keep it secret, but still... Okay, I have more things like them. So, also I was interested in this verse which says about that Krishna appeared as an incarnation. He appears as an incarnation in every millennium, and he appeared in three different colors: white, red, and yellow. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is giving many arguments there to explain many points. So I was also thinking, like, it's not clear white, red, and yellow. Who is white? Who's red? So he describes, I'll describe different points that he has given. So he says that in 11th canto it is described that in Satya Yuga the Lord has come actually in white color, Treta as red color, and in Dwapar as blackish, and in Kali Yuga as black. So there is a distinction, blackish and black. So I felt like probably Krishna might have been referred as Sham, which means blackish, is not, and maybe, so black is for Kalki, that's in Kali Yuga, is for Kalki, he's black color. He's saying that in 11th canto it is mentioned, in Dwapar he's blackish, and Kali Yuga he's black. So I don't know if he's making a distinction or is a, I don't know, I think blackish would mean black, like black. In this commentary, sorry, huh? That's why not, because that's described in 12th canto also. He's a incarnation for Kali Yuga, so why not Kalki? And yeah, okay. And so this kind of contradicts with this gear description here: white, red, and yellow. So it's not clear that. And another thing. Because if you take the literal meaning of this verse, which says that your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium, in the past he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color. So here also, and now he has appeared in blackish color. So he's saying that Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapar Yuga. So saying that in the past, this is the literal meaning of these words, if you just take it literally. So Krishna appeared at the end of Dwapar Yuga. So previous two yugas, there were three incarnations of three different colors, which is not possible in two. So basically, the Sanskrit verses, he's trying to explain. I think it can be understood if you understand Sanskrit. Then he tries to explain that there is this tatha pita. Like in Sanskrit, that when we use yatha and tatha comes as, right? So there is a word tatha pita, that then yellow. And he's saying the yatha word is not used, but it should come there. I guess more technical, I could understand. And so he's saying that he's describing in this verse, both Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna are being described. And the word idani, which means now, is being used in a broader sense. Like just at the end of Kali Yuga, at end of the Dwapar Yuga, and like at the just like close to the beginning of Kali Yuga. So it is describing both Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. And another thing is, like, there is, it is saying idanim Krishna. And another way you can take the meaning. So first he's describing colors, white, red, yellow, and then he's saying idanim Krishna tam gataha. Like, so you can also take this meaning in a way that all these go into Krishna. So when Krishna comes, all the incarnations, like all the avatars, yuga avatars, they all go into Krishna. So he's telling that this verse is declaring that Krishna is avatari. He's the source of avatar. He's not avatar, and both Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well. Another point, it was mentioned in the translation to this verse that Lord Ram appeared in parrot color. I think parrot color would be green. What do you say? And he appeared in another Dwapar Yuga. So I don't know if that, I heard, like, is that correct? He appeared in previous Dwapar Yuga. And do you know when Lord Ram appeared? It was written here, like he appeared in another Dwapar Yuga. Like previous Dwapar Yuga. Is the time up? Okay. And he also gives like two references to appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mahabharata, in which he is described as being of golden complexion. And like also he took sannyas, all those things are described in Mahabharata in verse, what? Yeah, Vishnu, yes, as a part of Vishnu Sahasranam that comes in Mahabharata. And it is, and Prahlad Maharaj, he also mentioned that Prahlad Maharaj, he refers to Lord as Sri Yuga when he's glorifying Lord Nrisimhadev. So he's saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like a hidden incarnation, Kalau Channa, he's covered in Kali Yuga, because he does not want people in general to know that he wants to come in the mood of a devotee. That's why. There are two names that I found for Krishna, and it was kind of interesting. Like Krishna is called Gop Gokula Nandan. In one of the verses he's referred to as Gop Gokula Nandan. That means that he is a son of all cowherds and all the cows. So he was saying that this comes from the Brahma Vimohan Leela, where Krishna became son of all the cows in the cowherd. So that's why his name is Gopa Gokula Nandan. And he's also described as Narayanaha Samaha, like to whom Narayana is equal, that means. So he's saying that Krishna is actually superior to Narayan by that saying, that to whom Narayan is equal. And then he's saying that how Krishna is much attractive than Narayan in some things, and that is like granting liberation to the demons, giving Mahabhav to his to devotees, and displaying Ras Lila. By those activities, he is superior to Narayan. I'll summarize the rest. I heard in one of the Radhanath Maharaj lecture that like when Krishna was eating dirt, and he wanted to escape punishment, though he lied that I haven't eaten dirt, and Radharan Maharaj will say that here is an absolute truth telling a lie. And it is, and some other details are given. I don't know how can we how can we understand the significance, but it's like he's saying that Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna, it is revealed that Mother Yashoda saw universe in Krishna's belly and not in his mouth. I don't know how that is. Okay, it was described that Krishna has many potencies, and that Aishwarya potency of the Lord, it acted on its own, because Lord has a desire, I am the Lord, so no one can force him, so that it acted on its own. And then in the following verses, it is because Yashoda Mata, she saw universal form of Krishna, so she was suddenly put in awe, but she immediately she started saying that okay, I'm thinking that I'm queen of Vrindavan, and she was thinking that I have this feeling of possessiveness, and she wanted to give up that. But as soon as Krishna thought, who will take care of me? Then suddenly her motherly affection arise. So here the difference is made between the devotion of Devaki and Vasudev and Yashoda and Nanda, how their devotion is much higher compared to Devaki. That when Devaki saw the Vishnu form, they were totally in awe and reverence. But Yashoda, just for a little while, she didn't even care. She didn't even care to know who Krishna is. She just thought, Krishna is my child. He needs me. And I also feel so much attraction for him. And that's a proof, that's enough. That he's my child. That's it. I don't want to know who he is. And so that's why her devotion was higher. And why this story came, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur was explaining that after the Garga Muni ceremony, Krishna's childhood naughty activities are described. So Parikshit Maharaj questioned that how come the Devaki and Vasudeva were not able to relish their childhood pastimes, and Yashoda and Nanda got to relish childhood pastimes of Krishna. So to this casual question, Shukadev Goswami replied that he told the story of Dhara and Drona, which were the previous incarnations of Yashoda and Nanda in their previous, and they prayed to Brahma. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was explaining that he was differentiating between Sadhan Siddha and Nitya Siddha, people who are liberated by following Sadhana Bhakti, and those souls who are eternally liberated. He was saying that it's not possible for Sadhan Siddha to be qualified to take to the post of Nanda and Yashoda. Those posts can only be taken by Nitya Siddha. He was making this point. And that's why it was a casual question, and he was saying that Shukadev Goswami didn't want to answer it at that point. He just answered indifferently and gave this story. And then he again brought this pastime of Krishna eating dirt, and Yashoda, she saw the universal form, and then so to explain her level of devotion to so by that way he explained to Shukadev Goswami that how elevated she was comparing, and then he also made a point that Drona and Dhara are basically, we would think that if they are eternally liberated, so how come they are doing austerity and asking a boon from Lord Brahma? He made a point that her level is so much higher compared to even Lord Brahma, Shiva and Lakshmi. Their devotion is so higher. It's because Lord Brahma, Shiva and Lakshmi are identifying with their position. So they are not ready, willing to follow under the guidance of Brajavasis. And so he said that it is not that by a boon by Lord Brahma that this position of being the mother of at the post of Yashoda and Nanda can be obtained just by getting a boon from Lord Brahma. So he said those are basically they were devotees, so they entered into Yashoda and like Nanda. So they were eternally living beings, but they entered the other two souls, Drona and Dhara, so they were different. And then another point was made, like, which was said in the poet, but it's nice, that like pride in wealth is more dangerous than pride in family or knowledge. Like when Narad Muni was saying that it can induce one to commit all kind of sinful activities. I guess there are...
Thank you, Ankush, for coming even when you were under the weather. And that was all very interesting. So any comments or questions on these chapters? Yes, Damodar.
I have a question about astrology and karma, more about karma. We understand from Brahma Samhita that every living entity from Indra to the Indra Gopa is bound by karma, but that one who engages in bhakti bhajan, devotional service, becomes freed from that karma. And also in the Nectar of Devotion, it's mentioned that there's four types of that karma, which is bijam, kutam, parabdha, and aparabdha, which means like the seeds of desire for fruit of activity, and then the reactions that are manifest from that, the unmanifest reactions, and the inclination to do it. So obviously the seed of desire goes away, the unmanifest reactions, and the inclination to do those activities, but our manifested karma, like this body and our possessions, our family, our opportunities, how are those destroyed by devotional service?
Our manifested karma is an expression of our own desires, past desires. So we have that expression because we've felt that way in the past. You know, we have this body, in other words, because that's what we wanted. So now we've changed the course of our desires. We still have the baggage that we brought into the deal. So this is why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, make the best use of a bad bargain. Whatever we could offer to Krishna, even within the limitations of this body, or even if we had a demigod's body, is very insignificant. Right? So the limitations of our bodies based on our past karma is really not a very important point. The important point is, can we offer 100% of what we have to Krishna? And for that reason, that element of our sinful reactions is not very important. The most important of those sins or aspects of sin is the inclination to commit sinful activity, purifying that. And that, in a sense, is what distinguishes these sadhana-siddha and nitya-siddha. Now, the sadhana-siddha is still at the point, okay, I used to be very sinful. I used to want to do this. Now I don't. Now I'm doing this instead. But the nitya-siddha has gone beyond that and doesn't even think about what was I doing in the past, just completely absorbed in Krishna's service. And Srila Prabhupada says that although it seems counterintuitive, you can become a nitya-siddha in a moment. How could you become eternally perfect when the moment before you were eternally conditioned? But that's because we think in linear terms and time. as soon as we are free of the inclination to commit sinful activities, we are eternally liberated. There's no more inclination. You see? So even if we have this karma from our past, that makes no difference. This body is just the particular vehicle in which we are now exercising our desire to serve Krishna. Is that all right? Okay. Any other comments or questions on this? Nanda Kumar Prabhu.
Just pick a few drops left for Ankush Prabhu. And so when he said Krishna lies, that he ate dirt, and when Mother Rishad asked, did you eat makhan of other a cow, other women's house, he said, no, I didn't eat makhan. So the way he says that, main nahi makhan khayo, but it also means, maine hi makhan khayo. So it means that I only ate makhan. So then he's not lying also. So the way he's choosing his words.
You follow? He's using a pun.
It's a brudge.
Brudge.
Yeah. So that was just a little.
So depending on where you put the accent.
Yeah.
I never ate it, or only I ate.
Only I ate it. Okay. Now another point is a serious point that Mother Yashoda was feeding Krishna milk, her own milk, and she was in really ecstatic emotion at that time. But she remembered the milk kept on the stove, and she put down Krishna. So it refers that a devotee, he might be in ecstasy serving Krishna directly, but enjoying Krishna's presence directly. But when time comes to serve Krishna, he prefers service to Krishna rather than his own ecstasies. So that's what Mother Yashoda did. That's a very good point.
This point was mentioned here. Yeah, I invited Mother Yashoda to meet Krishna because she wanted to meet Krishna.
So the same point, I guess. Yeah, Yashoda was so concentrated with what Krishna will eat and drink that she could temporarily ignore Krishna. And yeah, so it's basically...
Yeah. And the second thing, why the milk was overflowing from the stove? Milk was thinking that if Mother Yashoda is feeding all the milk Krishna, then what's the use of my existence? So I'll rather commit suicide. So the milk was flowing and going into the fire. And so when Mother Yashoda is running after Krishna, so the flowers from her hair is falling down. And then flowers thinking that this lady is so great that even Krishna is running out of fear. So what are we doing on her head? We should be on her feet. So they were falling down to her feet. And of course, we all know the meaning of two finger too short. So why did Krishna use of all the ropes before agreeing to be bound by Mother? Because, do you know any answer? What's that? Yeah. So they have practice of tying the hind legs of cows, and that would pain cows while milking. So he didn't want that all those practices. So he just used all the ropes, and now they are free for free milking. Yeah.
So that's very good. Okay. Jai. For those who didn't know, I just wanted to mention in this portion on Mother Yashoda churning, this was how they dealt with their daily collection of milk. The milk would be turned into yogurt, right, first thing. First it's collected and then boiled, and then the yogurt culture is put in and it's turned into yogurt. And then the yogurt is churned. So the yogurt will keep without refrigeration. And when the yogurt is churned, then it separates into butter and buttermilk. So the butter is then turned into ghee, and that will also keep without refrigeration. And the buttermilk can be drunk, and it will last a little bit. So this way they managed all their dairy business with no refrigerators. This is why it's a daily chore. You have to turn the yogurt into butter. Okay. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So you had a chance to do hard work. Oh, I see. Okay, any other comments or questions? Yes, Stephanie. Why is it mixed into this pastime? Well, these chapters, that's okay. These chapters are, in A God Who Dances, are combined three or four chapters from the 10th canto. So it was done like that just to condense it and make it a little more comprehensible to the reader. So each of these are distinct chapters, although, as you see, there are themes running through them that are related. So it is a separate chapter in the original, though. Yeah, these are in sequence. Wherever there was a common theme, I tried to tie them together. Okay, good question. Yes, Damodar? Oh. Hmm. Okay, Garrison, last question. She had other gopis help her with the ropes. They're bringing all the ropes. Adding ropes and adding ropes. Yeah, pure devotees. Pure devotees. Other devotees, not always. Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Ankush. And I'd just like to confirm tomorrow, who is our commentator? Yeah, who's doing tomorrow? Okay, Damodar, so you're going to be talking about the Cowherd Boys. I think that's Agasura. Well, it's chapter 4 in this book. Just check out chapter 4. It covers a few different leelas. And where's the Vishwanath book? We'll just leave them there. Okay. Who's got Wednesday? We had. Nimai, okay. Nimai Pandit, are you there? Okay. So I guess we'll just have to figure it out tomorrow. You could have Thursday if you like. That's Kalia. Yeah. Okay. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. The evil.